Accession number 27499, Mr. Pete Neville, Reel 7. Now, the next stage, you've been formed into this special little unit, the Gurkhas had arrived, but then there's a period of reducing the number, the numbers.
Yeah.
Where you, well, basically, you took out the dead wood, or it may not have been dead wood, but certainly you made sure that everyone was fit for the job.
Yeah.
Could you tell us about this procedure? Because it's quite a harsh procedure.
Yeah, we did jungle training with the Gurkhas. We did a lot of jungle training.
Well, tell me about that first, then, perhaps. That'll lead into it. What sort of thing would you do in the jungle training?
We go from A to B or something like that, you know, a point on your map.
So it's basically cross country.
Cross jungle.
Sorry, yes.
yeah.
And you would get it. What about the jungle conditions? I mean,
well, it's easy to get lost in a jungle. Of course you can, you know. So use your
compass.
Use a compass a lot, you know. And follow the Gurkhas around a lot.
Now, as you were going round on this, were you assessing your team then?
Yes.
Now, tell me about, because you seem to have the assistance of an officer and a psychologist, tell me about it.
It was necessary in the job that we were going to do, that people got together. They had to work as a team, work very well, you know, you couldn't have any unfriendliness or anything like that. So really and truly, it ended up where I got rid of the sergeant.
Now, why?
Well, he wasn't a suitable sort of a fella. He was he was very bossy. A number of things about him that I can remember. He wasn't well liked at all.
Amongst the men. Now, you also got rid of two radar operators, and one had already been injured in a night parachute drop.
That was a wireless operator that was injured. Yeah.
Now, what about the
radar op? Well, he was.
What was wrong with him?
Well, a nervous sort of character, I thought. He seemed to me to be a bit of a nervous character, you know. All the training that we were doing, mainly the jungle training, he seemed to be a nervous character, you know. He couldn't have a nervous fellow amongst them. Not really.
Now, how long were you doing this total training? It says 10 weeks. Now, that would take you from... You arrived in October. That would take you past Christmas, would it, into January? Or not?
No, it wasn't quite as much as 10 weeks.
So how long would it be? Into December, early December, or?
About mid-December. Mid-December, because... our first operation, which we'll talk about later on, was just before Christmas.
Right. Well, that's right. It's a bit difficult.
Yeah. So job to remember.
Now, so when were you actually briefed for this? Because, you know, you didn't know what you were doing for a long time.
No. I was only brief, really, about a week before the first operation, and the members of my group, they weren't briefed at all.
Now, tell me what you were told, as far as you remember.
Yeah. Well, we were. Well, the first operation would be about 60 miles in from Akyab.
East of Akyab?
Yeah, east of Akyab. East, yeah, it was.
Towards Mimbia, M-I-N-B-Y-A. I'm reading this from your notes, so just to help.
Yeah, Mimbia, that's right, yeah.
What were you doing?
Well, the objective was to pick up Japanese aircraft as they took off and landed. You know, you did by watching the response on the radar set. If you saw it flying, you had a response, and then the response would fade. You'd either it landed, you know, or suddenly it appeared, it had just taken off, you know. So you estimated around about where the place was, and you passed the information back to
by wireless back to base.
Yeah, back to a base, wireless. And then they would send in aircraft to with rockets and things like that, like thunderbolts and mosquitoes, to blow hell out of these Japanese strips. And that's what we did, really.
So you'd locate, you get where the airplane came, you'd locate the airstrips.
Yes. Through using the radar.
That was going to be your role.
Yes.
But you'd be dropped then, well behind enemy lines.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Now, what did you think of this role? It's very different from flying a mosquito or a boat.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, we were given very good information. There must have been some very brave person who'd gone into that area and picked up, because we knew where to get water, we knew where the Japanese were, we knew where the villages were, and they picked out an area where we could land and put our radar set up and things like that. All that was done for us. I had all that information when I went in. Wonderful.
And you didn't know who'd supplied it?
No, don't know who it did.
But it was accurate.
Oh yeah.
So what's the next stage? I presume we can go on to the operation itself, I think, unless there's any other part.
We realised that what we were doing was quite successful, really. Well, we found out later that what we had been doing was successful.
Now let's take us through it first.
Because it kept the Japanese aircraft on the deck, away from our troops who were there.
Hang on, that's the result. So let's keep it in order. So you've been briefed. You've been given this intelligence. What about actually flying in? How did you get there? Let's go on to that. The operation takes place, what, 2 days before Christmas? No, 14th of December you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about how you, the flight out. How did you get there? You
and about three Dakotas. I split them up. I was in one with a number of Gurkhas and a number of radar personnel. The chap who'd been made sergeant, who had been a corporal and made a sergeant, he went in another one with Gurkhas and personnel. And I think maybe the corporal was in the other one. And we jumped from about 1,500 feet.
Now what was the jump like?
Well, first of all, we would jump, and then there were chaps who were not actually a crew, but they were handlers, you know, for the kits and that sort of thing. And the aircraft would come round again, and this time they would drop the equipment on parachute. You know.
This is the radar equipment and the wireless, I presume.
Radar and food, water, and you know, the sort of thing we wanted, we needed. Yeah.
And were you able to find, were you, when you dropped, you know, you can spread out, were you, did you drop in the right place with it? And
yeah, I suppose really and truly the greatest distance between us and the equipment and each other was over a difference about a quarter of a mile. You know, you get spread out. But we, and it was in the dark at night. We did quite well actually in picking up the equipment as well and getting together.
And there was no sign of any Japanese?
No.
So
no Japanese, no.
Or any villages?
Well, about the nearest village was about 3 miles away. Now, they may have heard something, but if they did, must have been the Japanese, you know. They didn't do anything about it at all.
So you didn't see any of them?
No.
Now, so you've got them. What about, how did you set up your, what, you know, you're going to set up, where did you pick for your hide, if you like, or where are you going to set up the radar?
Yeah, well, we found that there was a hill with a pit in the middle of the hill, which had been used as a Japanese gun emplacement, I should think. Because that's where we set up, and there were some trees around it, and we used those trees to camouflage our equipment, and we picked up a system with ropes, so that if there was a possibility of being spotted, we would release the or pull on the ropes and bring the trees up. Cover the equipment.
So it was an ideal site for them.
Yeah, it was.
You didn't have to dig in, it was there already.
Another place found by this fella, whoever he was, brave bloke.
Now, did the Gurkhas dig in round the hill, or what did the Gurkhas do?
Well, they spread out around our area, and I would see them they're Nike each day. I used to make sure I saw them,
and they were acting as a defence screen.
Also they were on the lookout for patrols and things like that. Well, there was a point if there had been a patrol that came anywhere near us, it would have been their job to make sure that not one of them lived. You know, they would have to knock off every member of their Japanese patrol.
Now, you'd landed on, I've got it, there's the 14th of December. Is that right?
Yeah.
It says 10 shopping days to Christmas.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's one of those funny things that went through my mind as I was going down, you know. It's strange what goes through your mind when you're doing these things. I suddenly thought of the date and relative to shopping days, Christmas shopping days, yeah.
Now, the equipment, any damage? I mean, it's been thrown out of an aeroplane, I know it's parachuting, but was it all working?
Yeah.
So tell me about the operations then. So what happened then?
Well, it was set up in the hill. And we started operating. We made sure that we got in contact by wireless, and it just went on from there.
Now, you had a problem, didn't you?
There was one thing, was we had petrol electric generators, which created a hell of a noise. And at night, it sounded terrible. You know, you could hear it, must have been able to hear it. They may have been able to hear it in a village. So as we realised there were no Japanese air operation during night anyway, so we stopped using it at night. Stopped using the generator at night. And only used them from during the day.
When the Japanese might fly.
Yeah.
Now, did you detect much Japanese flying in that first mission?
Yeah, we did. We occasionally we picked up where they were landing and taking off, and we passed the information back. And on occasions, the as I say, thunderbolts or mosquitoes would come over and disappeared into the distance, and there was a lot of bangs and crashes as they were blew hell out of the Japanese airstrips.
So you could see that you were having an effect. Well, not see.
Well, we could tell. We could tell that we'd had an effect, yeah. And that was a boost to our, you know, it gave us to feel wonderful. We were doing something useful. Initially, we wondered whether we would be, but we realised that what we were doing was quite useful.
Now, what about your living conditions? I mean, where were you living? You know, did you dig in on the ground, or were you just living
in tents, well, camouflaged with natural bushes and things like that.
And how comfortable was it in them?
I don't know. It's about six people to a tent. It's pretty well packed in, you know.
Were the Gurkhas with you, or were they further down the hill? Or were some of the Gurkhas with you?
Well, they weren't in our tents. They had their own. Were they tents? Yeah, I think they had tents as well as us, yeah.
Now, what about food? What food were you eating?
Well, most of it was cold. Didn't do much cooking. In fact, the food that we were from
it says K rations and C rations.
K rations, that's right.
Yeah. Are they American?
American K rations. You get a breakfast pack, a lunch pack, and a supper pack. You know, that sort of thing.
And what did you think of them? Cold.
They kept you alive. That's all there was to it. You know, nothing wonderful about them at all. Mostly things were in tins, and there were toilet paper and a few fags and compressed fruit, dried fruit, and tins of spam and that sort of thing. You know, and biscuits. Enough to keep you alive, that's all.
And what about water supply?
We found where there was water.
Now, you've been told
in wet area. We call it a wet area. And we dug holes, and the holes used to fill with water. And then that had to be boiled. That was the only boiling we did, you see. But also, apart from boiling, we put tablets. What were they?
Water purification tablets.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Mm.
And
that not very nice.
Tasty,
horrible, yeah, yeah.
And what about the latrine somewhere? I presume you had to
dig
a latrine.
Oh, yeah, we dug a pit. And put a tree trunk across it. It wasn't. The Gurkhas didn't like that very much because they're used to just a hole in the ground, you know. And we wanted a seat, so we had a tree trunk. But we used to go to the toilet, and it dug quite deep. And we gradually filled it up with earth.
After you'd throw some earth on, cover a layer of earth after each layer of.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Now, how would you spend your day then? What was a typical day and night like for you?
Operating the equipment. Oh, night.
Day and night. You know what would you, I mean? Night, I presume you'd sleep.
Yeah, as much as possible. Yeah. But the daytime, of course, we were operating the radar equipment. That was the main thing.
Now, how did you operate?
Passing the information back.
How did you operate it? Do you remember how it worked? I mean, what was it like?
Well, there was an operator on the equipment, and he passed information down below to the wireless operator, who'd send that information back to a base.
Now, was it a? How did the what the aerial? Because radar aerials, they have to turn around, don't they? I mean, was it hand operated? How did it work?
Oh yeah, the radar operation was like a cage, like a box cage, on a tripod, really, and it was turned by hand, with a handle by hand. Backwards and forwards.
So you'd have a couple on the radar set in the wireless, and then what would the rest of you be doing? Would you have a lookout?
Well, the Gurkhas were doing that mainly. Lookout.
Now, on the 10th day, you definitely sighted an aircraft, both by radar and then sight. It came about half a mile from you. That was a Mosquito. The various things. Do you remember anything? Any other incidents you recall? I mean, you know, you've described it. As you later on, you know, the first 5 or 6 days, you don't seem to have seen much, detected much, but then you start getting busier and busier.
That's right, yeah.
Anything else you remember at this time?
At first we didn't hear, we didn't see or hear any aircraft at all, but after a few days they started coming through and using the information that we'd been given them, and as I say, it was either Thunderbolts or Mosquitoes that would go in and beat up these Japanese airstrips.
Now, one time, a Gurkha patrol sighted 5 lorries, Japanese lorries. Do you remember that incident?
Yeah, that was towards the end of the time that we were there.
I mean, did it come anywhere near you? Or?
No. I can't remember a lot about that.
Okay.
But they saw these lorries moving up. They were sort of getting out of the area then. It was when our armies were catching up in the area, you know, and the Japanese realised that they didn't stand much chance, so they were getting away from that earlier, that particular area.
So they weren't pushing forward, they were actually retreating or preparing to retreat.
Yeah. Mm.
Now, you eventually, on the 21st day, it says here, you got a coded message to expect relief.
Yeah.
Tell me about what happened. How were you relieved? I was wondering, you parachuted in, you got all this wireless and radar gear, secret, I expect. How were you going to get out with it?
suddenly a little armoured car appeared, and when we made sure that it was a British car, or friendly car anyway, we cheered and shouted, and they realised who we were, where we were, and the officer in there came over and asked how long we'd been there, and made arrangements, and lorries came and got us and took us back to aircraft and we went back to Chittagong.
And that was roughly speaking the 5th of January?
Yes, must have been.
That's the date you've got in here, though you do correct it once from the 4th to 5th. I mean, that's near enough. I mean, they can track that down. And how did you feel about this operation? I mean, had you enjoyed it, or would you rather be in your bow fighter or your mosquito?
I
mean,
oh, well, of course I would. No, it wasn't. It's a bit frightening, really, because you thought, you know, any time you could get picked up by Japanese, and if you did, you wouldn't stand a chance. You know, they would have tortured and murdered us all. We would have been.
You knew that.
Oh yeah.
And we one thing I forgot to ask: were you frightened of the creepy? British people often are frightened of the creepy crawlies of jungle life, snakes.
No,
insects.
You got used to those. No, you did certain things like, you never put your boots on without emptying them out, you know, that sort of thing. You made sure where you walked, there weren't any snakes around. Because snakes and things like that, they don't really attack you. You've got to step on them though, before they go for you. You know.
So you were all right.
You're pretty well all right. Yeah.
Now, when you got back. What happened then? You went back to Chittagong?
Yeah.
And then you seem to have done... two more missions. One in March 1945 and one in April, May 1945.
Yeah.
Now, anything happened before you go to the March one? I mean, what happened when you got back to Chittagong? Or were you just basically resting?
Well, we took it easy, really, more than anything. We practice now and again with equipment, say, you know. But in the main, we were taking life easy as best as we could.